Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome, one and all, to the FSHD Society Radio Show. I am your host, Tim Hollenbach, and if you're watching here on Facebook Live, you might recognize the face that is joining us via Zoom, and that is Jennifer Eggert. She is here to talk to us about mindfulness meditation. It is that show of the month where we kind of key in on those things. Before we get too far along, though, if you want to obviously message any questions through Facebook Live, we have the capability of answering those for you. You can email me, fshdradio at fshdsociety.org is another way to connect. And we're here for you because this is your show, and I believe that this disease has kind of a basic two parts, the physical and the mental side, and I wanted to make sure that we spend a little time each month kind of concentrating on those things. And we welcome Jennifer in now. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are
good.
You?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's always good to see you, hear your voice. You have a calming voice. You know that, right, Jennifer?
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's helpful if you're, teaching mindfulness meditation to have a calm voice, I guess.
Right. You don't want to be a screamer. Right, you don't
yell. Yeah, probably wouldn't work out really well. If I had a really strong New York accent, it might really, detract.
It might add a different element. Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah. Right. It would add a whole other feeling for sure.
I'm glad you're on for many reasons. Obviously, good to see you, and obviously, you're a master of what we're talking about, at least in my mind and many others. You might be humble enough to say, "Well, I know what I'm doing," but I think you're a master at this, and. I enjoyed reading what FSHD Society posted, blog post about walking in water. I wanted to kind of start maybe there, and then we're going to move into a little bit of mindfulness and practice in meditation tonight. I think that's really exciting. So
that's fun to practice a little bit together.
That is our teaser. That's our teaser. That's what they call that. That makes people hang on. They're like, "Oh, we're going to do it.
Ooh,
we're going to do that today."
So much to come.
So tell us a little bit about what you wrote and why the title Walking in Water, Mindful Movement Through Difficult Times is kind of how that post was titled.
So how did it come about? Well, June had asked me to write an article on mindfulness. She's asked me actually for a really long time, and finally got around to doing it. It came from an experience that I had when I visited some friends that live south of Syracuse. And I went up, I guess it was, I'm not sure if it was the end of August, beginning of September or something like that. It was in August at some point. And it was after, everything that we're all going through in this crazy, crazy time between, coronavirus and the radical changes in our lives that's brought, mm-hmm. The election and the stress that people have been experiencing, and with a lot of challenges across our country. And I was feeling I wasn't in a great state. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go visit some friends. I got an Airbnb, and it's really beautiful country up there. And I had this sense of like, I just haven't really felt alive lately, that feeling of where you feel like, wow, that energy of being alive. And I had this thing in my head, like that I wanted to like somehow find myself under a waterfall that I thought might help me feel alive. And so where my friends live is like right very close to some waterfalls, and I just, you know, my friend said, okay, you know, my first morning there, okay, we're coming to pick you up. We're going to take you to the waterfall. And I just kind of noticed all of this anxiety come up, you know. I noticed, you know, I was anxious about my body. You know, was it going to be a really long walk to the falls? Was I going to be able to do it? How was I going to feel when I was going to be in the water? Would I be stable enough? Would I be able to get out there? Just a lot of different anxieties coming up about my physical ability to do it. And, you know, I just really kind of was noticing all of it, noticing, you know, the contraction in my chest from the anxiety, noticed, you know, this desire to call my friend and say, nah, forget it. Let's not do it. I don't want to do this. You know, that was just the thought. And then also noticing the other part of me that was saying, no, how awesome would it be if you could actually do this? You know, why are you saying no? You know, so I just sort of was just very present with all of it and aware of my body and what I was feeling in that moment. And then we went ahead and we did it. And actually, oh my God, I can even show you a picture.
Oh man, yeah.
Now I could show everybody a picture. I have to look back on it. But when I started writing this article, you know, it really came to me that that whole experience was kind of a bit of a metaphor for mindfulness practice in general. That I think sometimes people think that what mindfulness practice is that it's sort of this blissful, like Zen place where you're floating and bumping your head up on the ceiling from all of your lightness. And in my experience, that's not what mindfulness practice is really about. But rather, what it is about meeting whatever the experience is in front of me right now. Oh, okay. There we go. Can you see that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yep. Wow. That's, yeah, that's beautiful waterfall.
Look at that. Yeah. And I sort of wading into the water with my friends, children, they really helped me, to do this. They helped walk me in, and I also brought my big walking stick with me to help stabilize myself.
Right.
But, you know, it occurred to me that it was like this real metaphor that what mindfulness practice is not about some, you know, painting pink roses on all of the difficulties we face in life. It's like, how do we meet it? Which means like feeling it and feeling the difficulty and being in the difficulty. And that's not easy. You know, I'm saying this, and when you said before master, I'm so far from that. But it is this practice of how do I meet my experience as it is, whatever it is. And with practice of meditation and body awareness and all of that, how to meet it with this compassion and this kindness towards oneself. This sort of openness and recognizing that as human beings, we go through really difficult times. And right now, collectively, we're all going through difficult times. It's affecting us all in different ways. Yeah. So how is it that we meet it without trying to push it away, without trying to pretend that it's not happening, without trying to make it be different, but rather this is where we are. This is what's in front of us. How do I meet it with this openness, this kindness, this compassion, and then also like responding wisely in ways in which that's helpful for us. So it was helpful for me to get in the waterfall, and I felt really alive, and it was a really good experience to first see that I could do it physically, and also just to have that experience of being in the ice cold water. So that's kind of where that all came from.
It's very symbolic, it sounds, right? To overcome the fear that you were giving yourself reasons to back out. I've been there, you know, like where I'm like, well, I really was looking forward to doing something. And then when that moment approaches, I find myself finding excuses to not do it that are legitimate, you know, because of a fear of this, or I should really be doing that, or whatever it may be. And it pulls me away. And then I totally lose track of the original reason why I wanted to do it to begin with. and what pushed me. You know, before we went live, you mentioned, you know, we were talking about instinct a little bit. And, you know, there's a part of you that you follow your instinct, you follow it. You, in that case, you want to do that something. You want to do going to the waterfall. And then you start to, you know, think oppositely. And then you start to accept that feeling of anxiety, like, yeah, then it's not worth it. Almost trying to convince yourself in that state of mind. So how do you stay focused to just hold the original thought to do what you wanted to do despite maybe fear? Because obviously you showed the pictures, you went in the water, and you didn't listen to the reasons to not. You followed the original reasons to do it. So how do we do that?
How do we do that? That's such a great question. I really do believe it begins with not, with you have to acknowledge the fears. You have to acknowledge that it's difficult. You have to be able to open to the difficult, open to the fact that this is really uncomfortable. And it's not anything to be ashamed of or anything that means anything about you that is negative. It only means that you're human, you know? It's simple. It really is, you know, accepting our humanity of, you know, the fact that things are hard sometimes and that, and similarly accepting our humanity when we make choices that mean that, you know, the fear wins some days, you know? And even in those moments, there's opportunity to learn, you know? It's like, you know, this thing about, you and I were talking a little bit about instinct and listening to our guts. I think is very much related to this, because how do we learn to trust our instinct and actually listen to that side of ourselves that says, no, go in the water anyway, even if it's a little scary.
Yeah.
The only way we learn that is by making the decision not to do it sometimes and to feel that, ooh, it was such this great opportunity and I missed that, so that we can actually feel that regret and feel that longing to do something different. So we need those moments just as much as we need the moments when we acknowledge our fears and make a choice to move towards them rather than away from them. So it's both are valuable. Both are opportunities to kind of learn something, experience something.
Yeah, it's something that when you talk about acknowledging the fear, it takes me back to when I was stumbled into that theory, unbeknownst to me, that it was actually a form of mindfulness, and then I don't want to say acceptance, but walking with fear. And it was me telling this young baseball team that I coached that at the time they were 10 years old, and I realized that 8 and 9, when I was coaching them, they were fearful. They were fearful of performing. They were fearful of getting hit by the ball or making an error, whatever it may be. And because of that fear, they were reluctant. They weren't athletic. So they were thinking, and they would just rather let the ball fall than catch it. I'll deal with when it hits the ground. I'd rather not try and then fail. I'll just act like I can't get to it or whatever it might be. And I saw moments of these things, and I'm like, man, they're scared. They're scared. And they have a right to be. It's okay. They're just kids. And this is their first time doing this at this age, and they have a right to be scared. So it was like, instead of saying, play through it, be tough, that I hear some coaches or mentors even, you know, say, it's more like, you know, acknowledge it. It's going to be there. It's probably not going anywhere. And move forward. To me, it's almost like kind of saying, you know, if you're afraid of the dark, you still step in the dark anyway and realize this is maybe uncomfortable, but I'm going to do it anyway. That to me is where then courage collides with fear. And I heard, being Veterans Day, this might be fitting, I heard it was a statement that a paratrooper made, where he said that he knew standing at the edge of the plane that he had to jump off and go into a battle, into a war zone. knowing full well he was scared to death to do it, but he did it anyway. And that was courage. That's the definition. To know full well this is scary, this is maybe even fighting every instinct in your body to do it, but for the sake of some goal or an experience, maybe, you know, even at that level, maybe it's not a paratrooper jumping in a war zone. Maybe it's just someone that wants to experience the waterfall, hike a trail that they thought before maybe was difficult, but they decided to do it anyway, putting themselves into a physical risk, and there's fear, and then you overcome it. But
it's reminding me, you know, it's like, I think that, you know, we started this kind of this wellness hour, you know, with the FSHD Society.
Mm-hmm.
Really been very interesting conversations. I really encourage people, if they want to get some additional support, it's very informal. Although Prilatensky shared a really wonderful article about people helping that sparked a fabulous conversation this past Monday. But, you know, those of us with, that's a side note, I'm just plugging that, but
you should. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, this business, you know, dealing with disability, dealing with the changes in our bodies, you know, as a result of FSHD,
mm-hmm.
As well as other people have other, you know, medical issues and disability, you know, as time goes on, you know, our lives can start getting smaller because things get more difficult. And it's really easy, well, not easy, but it's really natural that we stop doing things that we're nervous about. You know, I see it in family members, you know, I see it in myself too. You know, I'm nervous about doing something. And you had the conversation with Kent Drescher about ACT the other week. And a big sort of underpinning of ACT is that, you know, when we avoid things that are anxiety provoking, when we choose to avoid, then we really never have the opportunity to learn that perhaps maybe we could actually do something. And that avoidance begets more avoidance. Like the more we avoid, we begin learning, oh, this is the way to avoid feeling uncomfortable. So there's got to be this sort of willingness in some way to be a little bit uncomfortable, not so much that you're so flooded and that you can't enjoy the water, but enough so that we can cross that threshold from the anxiousness about doing something that makes us vulnerable or that's difficult. And have an experience, because then you want more, you may want more experiences like that, or you might learn that, ooh, this was a terrible mistake, I'm never doing this again. But at least it's based on a real experience. It's not based on something our head is telling us, you know?
That's true. Right. I mean, sometimes the head does definitely get in the way. I don't know. It's like, fear can be like a wave, you know, where it just overtakes you. So then you can see it coming. And then like I said before, like you kind of, you know, oh, I'm just going to ignore, you know, doing it at all. I'm just going to avoid that. And then that means now the fear goes away. Yeah. And then I think people become more, you know, sheltered than in homes, or they don't go out. And obviously in this situation, more and more people aren't anyway, because they're fearful of the virus, or they're fearful of you're getting sick, and rightfully so. I'm not making the
totally
point that they shouldn't be. Of course you should be. I am. I mean, I've been avoiding
and you need
like
to be cautious. You don't want to fall and hurt yourself. I mean, like this stuff is based in, you know, something important to preserve, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So it's not no criticism there.
Yeah. And the practice, and that I think is like the important word, you know, the practice of mindfulness, talk about that. What is the practice of it? I'm a coach, so I know what practice is, right? You go out, do the drills, and then you start getting better, and you key in on the things that you don't do well, and you figure out a form of practice that keys in on what you need to work on and get better. Mm-hmm. So, in the terms of mindfulness practice, you know, key in on that word if you could. You know, what does that mean?
Okay. So there's a lot of forms of mindfulness practice. I think things that most people are familiar with are sort of like a sitting meditation where you see somebody just sort of sitting quietly and mm-hmm. focused on their breathing or focused on their body, which is, you know, a core practice. But it's the idea of taking some time very intentionally, separating it from our normal daily life and using it to practice being present in an open, compassionate way.
Okay.
It's really a radical act. Jon Kabat-Zinn says it's like the most radical act to actually give yourself some time to practice being with yourself in this kind and compassionate way. Mm-hmm. And so the definition of mindfulness is, according, like, Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's the, I've talked about him before, he's the sort of father of sort of Western secular mindfulness practice, and founded the Center for Mindfulness at UMass Medical Center in Worcester, Massachusetts. He defines mindfulness as paying attention on purpose to the present moment with openness or with acceptance or with compassion. So there's a few elements there. So part of it is that we're practicing focusing on our attention on where it is we choose to place it. Because most of the time we're all over the place. You know, this thing. We're like, mm-hmm. you know, puppies,
right.
You know, like, well, what's that? You know, and often it's just our thoughts. It's not even something in the world. It's just our thought takes us there, a feeling, a body sensation, all those sort of stuff. So part of what we do is we practice our attention so that rather than being taken by all of these distractions, we develop this capacity to choose where we're placing our attention. So in the face of something that might be a difficult feeling, mm-hmm. we can notice it and bring our attention back to something else so that we're not getting, oh, this is this terrible thing. I'm getting so, we don't get sucked up by it.
Okay.
So we're practicing paying attention very purposefully to whatever's happening, whatever's unfolding in this moment, whether it's a pleasant experience, an unpleasant experience, or completely neutral and boring in the middle, which is a lot of it. So we pay attention on purpose to the present moment. And then this last part, which is the kicker, is with like acceptance. So if I'm experiencing an uncomfortable sensation in my body, I get curious about it. And the idea is that we're really training our minds to be able to respond to our experiences, no matter what the experience is, in a less, from a less reactive standpoint. So when I told that story at the beginning about noticing all of my reactions before going to the waterfall, mm-hmm. that's a moment of mindfulness. So in that case, the focus of my attention was what the sensations were in my body of the discomfort. Thoughts can be a focus of attention. I'm just paying attention with this place of openness. So we can practice mindfulness by focusing on something that we choose to, like the breath or the body or sound or thought, or there's all sorts of things that we can pay attention to. We could focus on movement, mindful movement, which is, you know, whatever you want to call that. If you're able to walk, then mindful walking. If you're in a wheelchair, then moving with your wheelchair and feeling the sensations of movement in your body and sensations on your skin. If you're able to do something like a yoga or something like that, that's a mindful movement. And we bring this open attention to noticing what it's like in the body. So there's a lot of different practices. There's also a practice from mindfulness-based cognitive therapy of tuning into difficulty in the body. And it would be great for us to do a little practice together today.
I don't think that
I really want to start with that, though. I don't think I really want to start with that. But this practice that actually, in the face of difficulty, in the face of feeling something uncomfortable in the body, that we can actually turn our attention towards it and allow it to be there and begin to start relating to discomfort in the body in a different kind of way. Maybe we'll do a little bit of it. I don't know. I'll feel it out, see how it feels.
Okay. But you brought that up. How would, because I know that you mentioned there when you were speaking about going for a walk and or going for a roll for some of us and being mindful within that action, the actual physical action or yoga, those that do that or a version of it like me. So it's okay then to do movements. You shouldn't be sitting still, or it's okay if you're not.
Oh, sure. I mean, you could do mindfulness practice with brushing your teeth or eating a meal. Actually, that's something we should do. We should get everybody beforehand to like bring, there's a great practice of mindful eating. And we could prepare everybody in advance or at the beginning to tell everyone to bring like a raisin and we can do that together. Maybe we'll do that next time.
Yeah, we got to do that. Yeah, that sounds interesting.
And it's we can bring mindfulness to anything that we do. We can bring it to, I often bring it to cooking a meal when I become aware of like the, what I'm looking at, the colors, aware of the movement in my body when I'm cutting things, how much effort I'm putting in. And I notice often I'm like clenching my mouth, grabbing the knife really tight. And I'm like, and then I notice all of this extra energy that's going into just simply cutting a carrot.
Yeah.
And in the noticing, something inside of me can release that tension in the jaw and can sort of become really curious. Well, how much effort do I really need to cut a carrot? And that's actually easier on the body then. I'm not clenching, tightening. So we can bring mindful awareness to anything. I just want to say hi to Daphne and Sue. I noticed that they said hello. I wasn't really paying attention to that, but I just saw see it on the other. There might be other ones too if we refresh better.
So far that's.
I always love seeing there.
Yeah, I love seeing the comments. Yeah, for those that have something to say, hi is always great too. But if you have any detailed questions for Jennifer within mindfulness, what we're talking about, feel free to do it that way. So how about that? What if we, is there a way you can kind of walk us through then within this moment of how would we be
doing
a mindful practice now? Yeah.
Yeah. It's super easy. Yeah. All right. We can absolutely do this. Right. I teach via Zoom all the time.
Awesome.
So let's do this. Okay. So whoever's watching, hello, let's do a little practice together.
Okay.
We can start the practice by taking our seat. And, what I mean by that is like, normally how we sit, we might sit like kind of slumped down or not really paying attention to how we're sitting.
Okay.
But as Jon Kabat-Zinn says, that when we practice, we try to have a posture that for us embodies the idea of like dignity. And whatever way you are able to sit, whatever would embody the idea of dignity for you. For me, it's often just kind of being aware of my spine without bringing more attention to the body. You know, it's not about a perfect sitting, but it's being aware that we're sitting. So let's just all just take a moment to just pay attention to how it is we're sitting and make an adjustment if we feel like we need to get a sense that this isn't our ordinary way of sitting. and that how we're sitting helps support our attention in one way or another. And if you're sitting with your feet on the ground, feeling your feet on the ground. If your feet are in shoes, you can feel the pressure of that. You can maybe notice temperature, or maybe there's other sensations that are there. So we just kind of notice our feet. And we can notice our legs too. And the way our legs are helping support us sitting. Or if we're lying down, just notice how the legs just fall to the side and allow them to do their thing. You know, we don't really notice this body so often. And then we can bring the attention to sort of our core, our body, you know, the pelvis and the stomach and the back. And whatever it is we find there, whether it's discomfort or tension or whatever that is, we just kind of notice it. We're just tuning into the body a little bit more, recognizing that we're in this body, we have a body. And then noticing your arms at your side, the hands. And the shoulders, where we can really hold a lot of tension. And we could see if we can notice some of that, if that's there. And the neck. So we're just scanning through the body and becoming aware of it. And then the face. Noticing if you notice tension, maybe in the jaw or the forehead. You can even let it go a little bit, allow your jaw to open up a bit. Allow your mouth to get a little slack. Release if there's some tension in the forehead. And noticing the very top of your head. Your scalp. But something can actually sense the body from the inside out. And if you're comfortable, you're invited to close your eyes, or you can keep your eyes open. You don't have to close your eyes. Some people find that that helps them to focus a little bit more. You can experiment with that. You know, you can close your eyes and then open your eyes. It's your practice, so it's for you to explore your own experience. And you may notice that you're breathing. And take a moment to notice where in the body you can really sense your breath very clearly, like where you know that you are breathing. Maybe it's at the tip of the nose or the back of the throat, or in the movement in the chest or stomach. And this is where we're going to focus our attention a little bit. This is the anchor. This is the place where you know, I am breathing. So let's bring our attention to that place in the body where we can sense the breath. And if you're having trouble focusing, which is so normal, being distracted during this, you're not doing it wrong. That's part of it. You can say to yourself, breathing in as I breathe in, breathing out as I breathe out, breathing in, breathing out. And let's just focus on the breath in this way, and it can help stabilize the mind to say to yourself, breathing in, breathing out. And you can do that as long as you need to. And let's just practice that for a moment quietly, focusing on the in-breath and knowing the in-breath, and the out-breath and knowing the out-breath. And as you continue to breathe in this way, you might notice that you're distracted. A thought might come in, or a sound, or a sensation in the body. And the mind might be taken away from the breath. So when that happens, we just notice it. We acknowledge it. It's not wrong. It's just the mind doing what the mind does. And then very gently bring the attention back to the sensation of breathing in the body. So we notice the distraction, we acknowledge it, not judging it, just see it, and then very gently come back to breathing in and breathing out. So let's practice that quietly for a minute or so. It's okay to notice whatever thoughts that come up. If they're judgments or anything, just notice it and then coming back to breathing in and breathing out. And really experiencing the breath as a physical experience in the body, experiencing the body breathing. We can notice sounds and then very gently come back. And then we could just kind of let go of the breath for the moment and come back to this question of, what is my experience right now in this moment? What's going on in my thoughts? You know, is it active? Is it quiet? It's not a right way to be, but just noticing it. Noticing if there's an emotional tone that's present or not. And noticing how the body is at this moment, what sensations come into awareness. And then allowing yourself to take a deep breath, full in, as full as you can without straining. And feeling that breathing in, and then letting it go. And another breath in the same way. And then we can kind of open our eyes, and then, you know, as we open our eyes, just sort of notice what it feels like to open your eyes after just taking this brief moment for yourself. Before we jump into a discussion, just noticing what it's like to now take in the room if your eyes were closed. And still having an awareness of your body as you do that. And then if you feel like moving a little bit, you can do that. And then notice what movement does to your experience. And then we can just let go of the practice for now.
That was really relaxing.
Oh yeah, is that your experience?
Yeah, that was mine. Yeah, I mean, I had the, I found myself creating lists, though. You know what I mean? Like when I had those were my thoughts that I didn't want there. That I wanted to keep mindful, like you were trying to say with breath and the body. And then I found myself sometimes my mind would wander to, don't forget you have to do this or this. Tonight,
list making.
Tomorrow, yeah. No, stop list making. You know, let's slide that away for a minute. And
but that's okay. We don't have to push it away. We just notice. Okay. Oh, list, and we can even label it. We can say, "I'm making lists." Mm. Now I'm coming back to the breath. Okay. It's not wrong.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm actually curious if people want to share in the comments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, if anyone else was a list maker, or a lot of times I find myself having conversations with people in my head. So I'm having whole discussions with people, imaginary discussions with people, imagining situations. Yeah. That's less lists, more that kind of thing. Wow. So it's kind of interesting, you know, what do people notice about their thoughts? It's not wrong. It's just tuning into what's happening. I'm sure you're making lists all the time, whether you're aware of it or not.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
So you said though that it was relaxing. What was the experience of relaxation?
For me, especially when you got to the point of you were going through the body from the feet to the head, and when you got to the face and you said, relax your jaw, I felt like you're talking right to me, because I felt that it was. And I'm like, why is that? Why am I like holding my jaw tight, or, you know, wrinkling my brow or whatever? And then I would notice like your eyes feel tense, like, those feel tense. And it was just this, like, right? Yeah, like, wow, this is like really like pinpoint every little part, you know. Mm-hmm. And kind of being kind
were
of
you aware
that.
Of those tensions? No. Before you practiced like this, right?
No, I had no idea.
It's really
no
interesting
way.
When we tune in to what's happening in the body. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, it is like when we are mindful of it. And I've gotten the reaction from people when you know, when I speak that way, and I'm trying to use it more. It's becoming, I don't want to say popular, because that means it's like a fad, but it's become more recognized as a proper way to deal with your life in general, but especially athletes and young athletes, you know, at like 14 years old and so on. And then I see that that's happening now in schools more. How do you deal with test anxiety? And I had that when I was younger. I would do okay on classroom stuff, but tests, I get a lot of anxiety. And my parents were, I guess, maybe a little ahead of their time, because they had me go to somebody for it, you know, through the school service. And that person, that I saw would ask me, you know, what do I feel, this and that. And those were those kind of conversations. But he gave me, you know, back in the day when you got a tape and it was his voice and he would do what you're kind of doing.
Oh, he would do. He was doing like, were you like tensing and releasing?
Yes. He said, like, let's just breathe.
Aggressive muscle relaxation. Yeah.
And he said, play this in the morning.
Great practice. We could do that too.
It was super helpful for me then.
Very relaxing.
It was. It was very relaxing. Yeah. And he would ask me the same question.
Aggressive muscle relaxation is generally considered a relaxation strategy as opposed to like mindfulness meditation. Mm. But you can do that mindfully. You can do anything mindfully. Mm. And that's a great relaxation strategy. You can go on YouTube and just type progressive muscle relaxation. It might be challenging for people, some people with FSHD, because it requires you to sort of tense different muscle groups and then release them.
Sure.
But you don't have to do that. You don't have to do it really tight or anything. And just like whatever your body works with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Looks like we do have a comment there.
Hi, Aura.
Yeah.
Hey, it's so good to see Aura. Says when she accepts her wandering mind without judgment, it keeps. That's right. That's so key. So Aura's comment was that she noticed that once she accepted her wandering mind without judgment, it becomes much easier to bring it back to the present moment. Mm. And that's so true. It's not true about anything. If I'm like judging myself, like, and I'm like telling myself I suck at this, or I'm doing this wrong, or
yeah,
you know, everything, which, believe me, I do it all the time. It keeps us from moving forward. We then get lost in self-criticism and self-judgment rather than the task at hand. Hmm. So how do we meet these judgments and see them just as you saw your lists? Mm-hmm. What if noticing self-criticism were no different than just noticing, oh, I'm making lists. Oh, I'm judging myself. I mean, it's not easy to do, but yeah, this is really what we're practicing. Mm. We're practicing being able to recognize that what goes on in our mind is not who we are. And a lot of what our mind tells us is just not true. Mm. It's just a lot of junk. Mm. And that's the kind word for it. You know, it's like our mind, you know, criticizing, judging, putting things in categories, telling us all of these things that are just not true.
Yeah.
And yet it's like the biggest show on. So we're like, you know, caught up in it.
Yeah.
So this practice is how we begin to notice all of those judgments in the way in which, you know, we just see, oh, right, that's happening. Judgment's here. I see this. Okay, yeah. I'm going to come back to my breath right now.
Huh.
And then it kind of loses its power a little bit when we're not reacting to everything all the time. But it takes practice, okay? We've had, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've had like 52 years of self-criticism practice. So I'm really good at it. So... it takes a lot of practice to unlearn some of these habits of our mind. So we have to be kind and patient with ourselves and recognize sometimes, you know, sometimes the thoughts win and sometimes, you know, not. And we continue to practice because there's the possibility for greater freedom from a lot of this junk.
When's the best time to do your practice of this? Of this practice, you know, mindful practice, is it in the morning, the afternoon? Does it not matter?
I think the best time to do this practice is when we can get it done. Mm. The hardest part about doing this practice is it's creating a new habit, you know. Mm. You know, just like, you know, if you want to start exercising or eating well, you know, it's like it's when is it going to make the most sense for you to do this? When is it going to be a time where you know that you'll be able to focus your attention and it's okay, you know? When, you know, there are certain guidelines, I think, that make it a little, can be helpful, that when you're trying to build a new habit, if you pick the same time every day, it's a good way to build a new habit. You know, if you build it into something like I brush my teeth and then I sit for 5 minutes, building a new habit, it can be helpful to have a structure like that. But if doing that prevents you from doing it regularly and it's easier for you to do it on the fly and you're starting out, then it is really best to do it when you feel like you can really do it, when it's really going to happen. I like to do it in the morning because I find that my mind is a little quieter in the morning.
Yeah.
And so it makes it a little bit easier for me, as opposed to at the end of the day when my mind is so much fuller. It's a lot more to work with. So I like the morning, to do it in the morning and make that a habit. And I'm imperfect with my meditation practice. I have a friend of mine, my friend Mark, and I, you know, help support one another. And I'll text him. I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit now. Or he'll text me. I'm going to go sit. I'm like, okay, I'm going to join you. And, you know, he's in Texas. I'm in New York.
But okay.
Help support one another in that way. It's helpful to have like a buddy to help support you to do it regularly.
Yeah. I think just like you said, it's a practice. Find it in a good time that you can make it that, a routine. I know this is awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time to break it down and go through it with us and those that have not ever tried it before. I hope that they followed along and I hope they found some peace in it and that it is totally doable. You know, this is not difficult. I think it's more, the difficulty probably lies in keeping the routine.
Yes, it is. That's the hardest part, is to really developing a new habit. You know, on that article that I wrote for the FSHD Watch, we should really put the link in the comment section so if people want to read it. There's also a list that David Younger and I, David Younger's another psychologist, like Aura and Kent and I, that we're all sort of working towards trying to bring more mental health awareness and assistance to the FSHD Society. David Younger and I developed a list of resources. David is a very experienced mindfulness practitioner and teacher. He's really wonderful. And so we have this resource list. And there's a couple of apps that are listed there, a few apps that you can take a look at. So if you're interested in learning and studying it more and practicing more, there's some great apps out there. I personally love the 10% Happier app. But that has a little bit more of like a Buddhist focus. I mean, no one's trying to push any religion on anyone, but it just happens to be that the teachers are more Buddhist because it comes from Buddhism, mindfulness practice. And then Headspace is something that's more neutral. Those are the two that I tend to use most, but David had some other ones that he really loves that are listed there too. So you can check different ones out and try those. And there's also a number of books and other kind of resources on mindfulness practice that if people are interested, they can begin to explore on their own.
Yeah, there's a ton of resources that you listed. You're right, with podcasts and apps and books for people to dive into. I have heard of the Dan Harris's 10% Happier.
It's such a great app.
It really is. Yeah.
And really down to earth. It's like Dan Harris couldn't be more like down to earth. I think you would really like that one, to tell you the truth, Tim.
Yeah.
I think you would like Dan Harris.
I've only seen him talk about his 10% Happier experience because, you know, he was very open about his addiction issues, and then he had the meltdown on live TV that's where he kind of realized I need to change how I do things, how I live. And mindfulness practice was one of those tools that he used.
And he's really into it. And he studies with Joseph Goldstein, who is a very well-known mindfulness teacher. He's a Buddhist practitioner. But again, no one's trying to push, you know, ideology. Buddhist psychology is really a psychology. I mean, there's aspects of it that can be more sort of theological. But on this app, it really is a more secular presentation of it. So,
right.
If people are worried about that.
Yeah, and I'm in the process, I think, through my own little Facebook here, trying to post that link there for people that are watching along here. And trying to get it on the comment notes for you guys before we let the show expire on us before I miss that opportunity. So I think that's a good idea to kind of share it. There we go. I think I got it now. Definitely to kind of get people involved as much as they can within this practice. And I don't want to say buy in, but just I hope you gave it a shot tonight. And then I hope that kind of starts planting the seed that this is something that could be exceptionally useful. And if it's practiced, right?
Right, exactly. And
accepting your experience, yeah. Because, you know, he was very open about is it exceptionally useful?
Yeah.
And if it's practiced, right?
Right, exactly. And whoops, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Got some feedback there.
That's all right. So yeah, thanks for being on this show today. We look forward to talking to you again. And yeah, I want to do the one you mentioned, the mindfulness with food. You're talking about raisins.
Oh, okay. So we'll do a mindful eating of a raisin exercise.
Yeah.
So I don't know when the next time I'll be on is, but what we can do is encourage everyone to just bring a raisin, or we could just ask everyone to go get a raisin or a little morsel of food at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, yeah, I mean, the idea of mindfulness practice is not just for sitting on a cushion separate from our lives. The idea is, how do I bring this into my life and
right.
live life and in a way where I'm more aware and more centered and more present. And so we can practice with really ordinary activities like eating or brushing our teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even in those moments. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thanks again. We appreciate
thanks,
it. We'll talk to you soon. Pleasure. Yep.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. That is Jennifer Eggert. She is mindfulness coach and helped us practice that, right? Practice makes perfect. I don't use that term with my baseball players at all, because that's not necessarily the truth, but I think you have to get into a form of practice. We talk about the mental and physical side of FSHD, both require that. You know, you're going to get your body more in motion. You kind of take on a practice of doing those things. And then when it comes to mindfulness, it needs the same way. In the mornings, when Jennifer was talking about when she answered the question, I said, well, when is a good time to do this? And she said, well, you know, I'd usually do it in the morning. I think I would tend to agree for myself. It might be different for you. But the way I see it is you kind of feed each part of your body. You're going to feed your body the physical things it needs, or nutrition, right, for diet. You feed your spirit. So for me, I watch my pastor. He has all his little homilies and things, and I'll watch one of those in the morning. And then also now I'm going to incorporate more of this mindful practice within that. And I think then you're feeding those parts of you, because you got to feed the positive dog, as I say, right? And that's part of it. That's part of it. If you don't, kind of get a little more negative, for sure, for sure. So I really thank Jen for joining us on that. And yes, we've put the link of the article that she posted for us on FSHD Society. You can find out more about Jennifer at jennifereggert.com. That's her website to learn more about what she does. So we thank her for being here. Before we close up shop, just want to do a couple little plugs of events that are coming out and happening on the FSHD Society world. Saturday the 14th, there is the Colorado virtual chapter meeting, as well as the Mid-Atlantic virtual chapter meeting. Go to fshdsociety.org to find out exact times, as well as on Sunday the 15th, the New England virtual chapter meeting is happening. On the 19th of November, the FSHD University webinar, the Utah FSHD Society, one of the landmark studies in FSHD involved in 1950 publication involving more than 1,200 members of an extended Utah family affected by FSH muscular dystrophy and traced back to a pioneer founder born in 1775. Wow, that sounds fascinating. This webinar explains how the study continues as the search goes on to identify more members of this family. That's fascinating. Tune into that on the 19th. Saturday, the 21st of November, New York City area chapter meeting there. The 24th is the Share Giver Hour. This monthly meeting is for those of you who are providing care to loved ones with FSHD. This virtual meeting is a safe and supportive space to share your experiences, challenges, and helpful tips with other caregivers. Pre-register for your personalized link to join the meeting, all at fshdsociety.org. Looks like on the 18th. Let's talk about the next FSHD Society radio show as we go to the physical side of FSHD. That is with Mitch and Bill. Mitch has been giving me more exercises, and I need to get in touch with him. He's got some more he's given me, so we're going to talk about the work we're doing on flexibility, I think was the subject we geared in on last episode with them. So we look forward to talking with them on next week's show on the 18th. Wow. Month goes by fast. On the 25th, it's the Thankful show that we're going to have on the FSHD Society radio show. That show is going to be all about you. So I'd love to hear from you on that one. I really want to make sure that you chime in. Let me know what you're thankful for, right? With Thanksgiving coming up that very next day, well, we're going to make it a casual, fun show. And I think I'm also might sprinkle in of how are you celebrating Thanksgiving in this, you know, virtual world that we're in of kind of gathering, but virtually. I hope to keep everybody safe this Thanksgiving. Then in December, I want to kind of creep a little forward for you because Giving Tuesday is going to be December 1st. That's super excited. That's going to be our big telethon event for Giving Tuesday. And then the show we had last week scheduled that we canceled because of all the election things going on, thought that that was too big of a distraction for me to pull you away for our guest, who was Ed Barakos. He's the ACLU civil rights lawyer. He's going to be on the 2nd of December. Ooh, that's a lot of events, a lot going on. If there's anything you missed and maybe you need to know more specific times, visit fshdsociety.org. Thank you again to Jennifer Eggert for joining us and going through what is a mindful practice, and she did some of that with us. So no excuses now. It's out there for you. You can find this show and all the other past podcasts anywhere you find podcasts. Please rate and review to kind of climb us up the ladder and tell your friends about the FSHD Society show because we're on Spotify, Google, so many places. Until next time, thank you for being here. Be safe and take care. You've been listening to the FSHD Society radio show.